Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast. Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Good evening and welcome. It is Pulse of the Pack, preseason game number 2 in the books. The Green Bay Packers are still well on their way to 23-0 after a 51-34 drubbing of the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday night. I am Jacob Westendorf, your host, in the final podcast that I will ever do without being a homeowner. I move into my home on Friday evening. So hopefully we're set up and everything so that when the Packers take on the Raiders Friday, I'm ready to watch it. You know, I keep track of all the important shit. So I am your host. With me, as always, is Jason Perrone, who himself has been a homeowner for, well, quite some time. I can't keep track of all the years because there's so many of them. Jason, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good. Nice little last-minute Pulse of the Pack podcast going down where – doing the show on Sunday afternoon, so we got a full week ahead of us. And I just want to clear the air here for those of you who follow us on Twitter, especially me. I take great exception to the way that the Chicago Tribune likes to describe the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, who does have a name. It's Aaron Rodgers. The Tribune does not like to acknowledge this. And they do acknowledge him.
Because they should be referring to him as Daddy.
Yes. So they are as petulant as can be, have been for many years. The bitterness of that pill is very, very strong and adept. And I will just say this. This might sound like a convenient backtrack, but I need to qualify something because I'm from Illinois. I was born in Aurora, lived there for several years before moving up north to near Milwaukee and growing up in Wisconsin. I'll always have Chicago in my blood, Illinois in my blood, and I proudly represent and sport that when I talk about where I'm from and my upbringing. So when I use the term fib, and those of you who don't know what it is, you can feel free to go ahead and look that up yourself. I'm not going to describe it or explain it. I am speaking specifically to a subsection of the residents of the state of Illinois who do not well represent that state. And the Chicago Tribune is absolutely a member of that club. Now, obviously, my good friend and cohort here, Jacob, lives in the great state of Illinois. So technically, by definition, he would be a fib, but not the way that I use the term. And I get that that's a convenient thing to say. Again, it doesn't excuse the ability to use racist terms and things that are highly offensive to a group of people. But I just want to state for the record where I'm coming from when I use that term. I'm from there. So I don't know, Jake, you can have your thoughts and opinions on it, but I feel like I can kind of make that call. But anyway, on to Packers football. Got some good stuff to talk about. It's good to be back at it. And early congrats to you on your home. I know you're very excited.
I am. And I've got all my stuff ready to be set up, and it'll be set before September 9th when the Packers take on the Chicago Bears, which is 3 weeks from today. I got to say, Jason, this is going to be impressive between the two of us because I think we decided within a half hour that we were going to do this show. So we just kind of threw it together here at the last minute. So maybe not the most prepared show, but it wouldn't be the first time we've done that. I think the last time we had a spur of the moment, let's go right now show was after the Packers beat the Cowboys in the playoffs a couple of years ago, the Jared Cook Crosby game. So this should be fun. As I mentioned,
well, and Jake, not only did we do a show, but we had two guests on that show. We did it last minute, and we got Justice Mosqueda and Aaron Underwood both to come on that show. That was like a huge win-win for us.
That's right. That was awesome. So thank you to those guys for doing that last minute that evening as well. It was a fun night. I mean, the drunk on emotion kind of claim that we both had that, my God, just reminiscing here a little bit about the Packers' last playoff win. But we're on to this season where we're hoping for a couple more playoff wins and a Super Bowl win, title number 14. And if the preseason is any indication, Jason, the Packers are going undefeated this year. Now, of course, that's not going to be what happens ultimately. They're not going to go 23-0. No team in the history of football has ever done that. So I can't say that I would be betting on the Packers doing that right now. But there was a game on Thursday against the Steelers. Now, the Steelers didn't play Ben Roethlisberger. They don't have Le'Veon Bell, as I'm sure everybody knows at this point. And Antonio Brown didn't play either. So it wasn't their A unit, but there's still things to watch for. Like I say, the preseason is kind of a necessary evil. I enjoy it for what it is, you know, watching some of the guys that are never going to play in a regular game get their chance at some stuff. Watch some guys on their way back that haven't been in Green Bay for a while. We'll get to those here in a minute. But as always, everything with this team starts with Aaron Rodgers. So we're going to start there. I don't know how much can be gleaned from their first possession of the only possession of the preseason with the first team offense, but it feels like they kind of hit all their checkpoints. You know, Rodgers took a hit. He got back up. He escaped the sack and ran and made my heart stop, which happens very frequently in a preseason whenever he takes off. He hit Devontae Adams on a slant. And my goodness, Devontae Adams is going to be straight filth this season. And then threw a touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham to finish off the drive. So, Jason, I say all that to say you have to like what you saw from that first possession. I know it was four passes, and he took off running on one play. So he only attempted four passes, but there were five plays. And he threw a touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham, which I think we're going to see a lot of this year. But you have to like the start, don't you?
I did. It was awesome. And it didn't need to be a huge sample. I mean, we already know what Aaron Rodgers can do. He doesn't need a ton of preseason. I kind of like the fact that he snuck into this game and he decided, hey, listen, if I'm going to play in the preseason, I'm going to give the pleasure to our home crowd, our home fans, because these next two preseason games will be on the road. Traditionally, the third week, this upcoming game that they have against the Raiders, is the one where the starters used to play the majority of it back in the day. And when Favre was on this team, I remember Mike Holmgren playing his starters into the third quarter. And that just doesn't happen anymore. So I loved it. It was quick, simple, get in, get out. Nobody really got hurt. Justin McCray, apparently a thigh bruise, looked a little bit nasty. It was kind of scary because I kind of have him penciled in as the starting right guard right now. But I think he'll be okay. So it was all good things. But I loved the touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham. Rodgers has his elusiveness. He's so smart in there in the pocket, able to sneak around, duck around. We saw in that short sampling enough for me to know the offense is not going to be something that we need to worry about this year.
No, not as long as, you know, I've always likened this set of weapons similar to 2014. Devontae Adams is going to be a star, so that's like Jordy Nelson. Randall Cobb is probably a lesser version of what Randall Cobb was in 2014, but him and Jimmy Graham together should make about to similar of that production, that threat on the field. And Jimmy Graham as the third option, as I mentioned, is a better option with all due respect than rookie Devontae Adams, who was still learning the tricks of the trade. So as long as those guys are healthy, and, you know, to use Jason's caveat there, if healthy, yeah, the offense I think is going to be in pretty good shape. I think the starting five on the offensive line is going to be fine. I know a lot of people are wringing their hands about depth on there, and we'll get to that here in a minute. But I think the Packers are going to score some points this year. I think a lot of teams are going to score some points this year, and we'll get to reasons why on that again later as well. But it was a nice start. It was nice to see Rodgers throw a touchdown pass to Jimmy Graham. I think it was kind of clear that they were trying to do that, oddly enough. In a preseason game, you can afford to do some of those things. They didn't run the ball on the first series, which is something I personally appreciated. I think the Packers run the ball too much considering the fact that you have Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback, but that is a separate topic. It was a nice start. They put the ball in the end zone. They were efficient. They had good field position and took advantage of that. Davante Adams, his play, I mean, I know it seems simple that it was just a slant, but he cooked his guy in the slot, and then that was Morgan Burnett he was running away from. I mean, he made Morgan Burnett look very slow. I think that Adams is going to have a huge – see, I'm talking like 80 catches, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns kind of season, and maybe higher. I don't know. Obviously, I don't have a crystal ball here. I can't predict health and all that sort of stuff as well, but Adams is a stud. And Jason, the two of us being co-presidents of the Team Devontae fan club, along with guys like Ross Uglum of Cheesehead TV and Zach Cruz, I think those were the big four between the two of us and those two that were in his court following his disappointing sophomore season of, no, just kind of stick to your guns. You know, this guy clearly has shown some stuff as a rookie. He didn't just forget how to play football. It's nice to see those dividends pay off. Jason, what are your expectations this season for Adams? Because he's really shown up big in both preseason games, one with Aaron Rodgers, obviously, and the other one was with Brett Hundley. So it's not like Rodgers is making this guy who he is.
Adams is his own guy. I mean, his mechanics have gotten so good, and he has picked up the subtleties that are going to make him good with anybody throwing him the ball. Aaron Rodgers doesn't do anything for Davante Adams getting off the snap. He doesn't do anything to make the cornerback completely turn the wrong way. That's not Aaron Rodgers. That's Davante Adams. He is a very good wide receiver in a vacuum. And that is exactly what you want when you're pairing him up with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. Adams is going to make his own plays. He's going to get open, and Rodgers just needs to get the ball to him. And you happen to have a guy in Rodgers who can put the ball in a basket the size of, you know, that is barely bigger than a football, 50 yards downfield. So that's a pretty good combination. I can't claim that I was totally Team Devontae like you guys were. I don't think I ever wanted him cut, but I definitely was watching very closely in 2015 and kind of trying to decide if they should keep him or bring him back, or if this was going to be kind of a lost experiment, because we've seen good players come in and out of Green Bay over the last several years and decades of us watching this team, and there was no guarantee that Adams was going to come up out of it, but then 2016 came along, and sure enough, he did. So huge dividends. He's the clear, far and ahead number one receiver in Green Bay. And if there's anything good that might have come from Jordy Nelson's departure, it's that fans, the team knew this. That's why they did it. But fans can no longer hang their hat on and point to Jordy Nelson and try to claim that Devontae is still up and coming. He's still learning the game. He's not wide receiver one. All these things that are caveats for why Adams isn't quite the man yet. You better hope that he is if you're a Packers fan, because Jordy Nelson ain't walking through that tunnel anymore. He's wearing silver and black, and we'll see him this week playing against the Packers. Fortunately, it's in a meaningless game. So 17 is everything this team needs season to believe that this offense can be a championship caliber offense. He's a huge part of the reason why.
Absolutely. Wide receiver one. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year we're mentioning him in the top five of wide receivers in the NFL kind of stuff. Obviously a very crowded group, a loaded group there, but that's how talented this guy is. And it's just been fun to watch, you know, a guy who, I mean, really, you know, you go back to that year where Jordy blew his knee out and Adams was kind of the guy, you know, he was supposed to be the guy that stepped in for that. And I mean, just kind of fell on his face. I mean, it did not go well. He got hurt early in the season, never really recovered from that. And then was clearly, it was in his head by the end of the year, you know, the struggling of catching the football and all that other stuff that went on that season. And then you got people wanting Jeff Janis to play over you and all, just all this stuff. It's fun to watch stories like that one. The offense isn't the only thing that took place as far as starters on Thursday night. I keep thinking it was Friday, but it was Thursday. It's this Friday that the Packers play. Thursday night, the starting defense also got some run on the field, and another Packers player who is back in Green Bay announced his presence at Lambeau Field in a big way. Tremont Williams took the first play of the game, and Mason Rudolph learned a couple lessons the hard way. He stared down his receiver, and Tremont Williams jumped the route and then walked into the end zone. It was a pick six immediately. Jason, you've talked about this. We've talked about this together, how Tremont Williams is that he has that veteran savvy, he has that veteran's homework, and he can still play. It's not like this guy's just out there to be the team mascot. He can still play. And he came out on the field, and you said he's going to have a game this year that happens where he wins a game for the Packers. So question now is, well, I'm not going to ask you to call your shot, I guess, just yet, but what did you like to see from, I mean, that's a perfect way to welcome himself back, isn't it? I mean, Tremont Williams coming back to Green Bay, that's a perfect way to do that.
Yeah, it was. I said he'd win a game this year. He's going to, and I mean a regular season game, and he's going to make a game-changing play. It was the savvy that made that whole play happen. I wrote my recap on Cheesehead TV the next day that went up, and some of the fans on there were actually kind of talking about how it wasn't that impressive because of who was throwing the ball. It was Rudolph, and, you know, it wasn't Ben Roethlisberger, and can Tremont make plays like that against starters? Well, yeah, that's why he's in Green Bay. That's why the Packers trust him and signed him to come in instead of drafting a third cornerback or going out and signing a younger cornerback. It's because he takes such good care of himself. He studies. He understands how to play the game. He understands how to still be making plays like that, even if he doesn't have the same speed and physical skill set that he had 6-7 years ago when the Packers were winning the Super Bowl. So that's all moot. We saw Charles Woodson do the same thing. Later in his career, he was still making plays because he was smart. He knew where to be. That film study made up for him not being as fast, but if you know where to be and you need to, and you're in the right spot on the field, good things are going to happen. So I think there's a good chance, and you know, there's two more preseason games, so injury could change this whole discussion. But I think there's a very good chance that when the Packers defense takes their first snap against the Chicago Bears in week one, number 38 is going to be on the field for it in some capacity. I saw him playing some safety. He played a corner. That play right there, again, you know, baiting a quarterback, jumping the route, walking it into the end zone. That was something we didn't see hardly any of last year. You know, Demarius Randle had at least one interception for a touchdown. I don't know if he had multiple. He was their most efficient corner. He's gone. He's not even on the team anymore. So I think it was a smart move. The Packers wouldn't have brought Williams back if they didn't think that he could be a big part of this defense. Not just a coach on the field and like, hey, we got to let the young guys play. Sure, it would be ideal. Would it be ideal if we could put Kevin King, Josh Jackson, and Jair Alexander out there, and they could all play like seasoned vets? Sure, because they're all young and fast. That's just not the reality. Tremont Williams proved to me why I should feel really good that he's on this team. He's going to make plays. He's not just there to coach. He's there to play, and you make the plays that are in front of you. I don't care what the situation is. He did that in this game. That's all that matters, because that's what's going to win games, is making plays.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Packers have said several times that they wouldn't have brought it back just to be, like I said, the team mascot. They think clearly he can still play, and Tremont's proven that over the last couple seasons, he can still play. I think expecting him to be like prime Darrell Revis or something like that would be a little over the top, obviously. Darrell Revis is one of the greatest cornerbacks of all time. But expecting him, you know, I don't know if that's a guy that you can say, okay, that team has Julio Jones and Tremont, you're following him. I don't know if that's something that he can do anymore, but is he going to be in the right position? Is he going to make plays? Is he going to give up some plays? Yes. But is he going to make plays to make up for those? I think he is, and I think you saw a glimpse of what that can look like on Thursday night. The rest of the secondary actually had a really good night as well. Jaire Alexander made his debut. He played 10 snaps. He didn't show up, but film guys like Ben Fennell, Ross Uglum, other guys have said he was in position. He made Juju Smith-Schuster work for every inch he got. And Juju Smith-Schuster is not some dude that's going to be bagging groceries next week. That's one of the better number two receivers in all of football. So Jaire Alexander was covering some good players. He only played 10 snaps, but I think that'll come up as time gets closer. He's still battling a bit of a groin injury. And then my guy, Josh Jackson, I've talked about him. Again, I keep bringing up Ross, but I think the only one who's been more in his corner than myself is Ross. And Josh Jackson had a pick six. He's played well in both preseason games. Again, I'm not expecting him to be the perfect cornerback all season, obviously, but I think he's a hell of a player. And I think that the Packers, it's very possible that they found two gems at cornerback. There are some guys, Ben Fennell said about Jaire Alexander that he's not sure how to explain it, but Jaire Alexander just looks different when he's on the field. There's a different vibe about him. He thinks he's going to be a special player. Obviously, the Packers think that as well. They drafted him 18th overall. So, Jason, you were talking about Tremont. That's the old guy. Devon House, that's one of the old guys, if you will. Kevin King was having a really good camp. I'm concerned about his shoulder. It's the other shoulder, if you will. It's not the same one that was hurt last year. But I am concerned about his shoulder. But when he's healthy, his potential is there. And obviously you've seen some of the potential with Jaire Alexander, and you've seen the production on the field with Josh Jackson. This is a cornerback group that is 24 months removed from having Demarius Randle, Quentin Rounds, and Ladarius Gunter as three of their four best corners. Now, Demarius Randle's in Cleveland. Quentin Rollins is playing safety. And Ladarius Gunter, I believe, is in Carolina, but I'm not 100% sure. I know that's where he went after Green Bay cut him. Jason, this is a makeover overnight. And, I mean, of those three guys, let's just do this here. Obviously, I mean, my answer is going to be Josh Jackson. Kevin King, Josh Jackson, Jaire Alexander. Of those three guys, which one right now excites you the most?
Jackson, because we've seen the most from him. And I knew that he had the attitude to get in there and make plays. Josh Jackson kind of plays like he doesn't give an F, and I love that. That's the kind of player I want on this defense personally and selfishly, without knowing what the ins and outs of the defense and the responsibilities and the assignments are. I love that attitude. It's an intangible. I talk about intangibles all the time because I'm more of the every fan. I'm not the X's and O's guy, so I can't sit here and tell you what kind of coverage he's playing, but I can tell you whether a player's got moxie or not, and Jackson's got no – isn't lacking any of it at all. I didn't see enough of Alexander to really get a feel for what he'll do, but I've seen enough from the practice recaps and for those that are at practice covering the team that have talked about Alexander and the way he plays and some of the things that he has also done that don't have me worried at all that he'll probably make this more of a discussion. You ask me this in 2 months, for example, he's going to make it a little bit tougher for me to answer, and that's a very good problem to have. Kevin King, we don't know anything about because we haven't seen him out there. Of course, it's a concern, his shoulder. We don't know how severe it is. Last year, I think we all kind of hoped it wasn't a big deal. Oh, the Packers wouldn't have drafted him if his shoulder was such a problem. Well, yes, it was. And yes, they did. They drafted him, and his shoulder was a huge problem. He was wearing a brace. And so if he has to do that again this year, is he going to be hampered by his ability to go up and make plays and not be 100%? I don't know how similar this injury is to last year's or the one that he suffered on the other side. So they need him. They need King to play well, ideally. But this is, again, this is why you signed Tremont Williams. This is why you have Devon House out there, who, by the way, is going to make this team, Devon House, because of some of the other corners who aren't ready to make plays. Quentin Rollins is not a corner, so we shouldn't even be talking about him in the cornerback discussion. And I wasn't impressed with what I saw from Donatello Brown and some of the other guys that are on the fringe fighting for roster spots. So, you know, we need those backup guys and those guys out there that can help make plays. Where I think I'm more concerned is what's behind the corners, because the safeties did not look good in this game. And so if everything gets past them, what's back there right now leaves a lot to be desired from what I saw of Bryce and HaHa Clinton Dix and their tackling and some of their coverage in that last game. But if they're playing vanilla and maybe Petten's not dialing up the coverages or the pressure that would help those guys back there, I'm not gonna hit the panic button quite yet. But give me Josh Jackson all day. Again, a guy that I thought the Packers would draft in the first round. They were lucky enough to get him in the second round. And if he's going to play like that all season, he's going to be one of the best values and steals of this draft and possibly, you know, several drafts coming up.
Absolutely. And I've talked about it, you know, several times, how Josh Jackson, I thought he was the best cornerback in this draft. That includes Denzel Ward. That includes Mike Hughes. That includes Jair Alexander. Name your guy. I thought Jackson was the best one of all of them. So far, he's making me look pretty good, which I will always appreciate, obviously. You know, the other thing about Alexander is it looks like the plan for him is to be the starting nickel corner, the slot cornerback, the Casey Hayward role, the Micah Hyde role, whatever way you want to look at it. Obviously, the roles are going to be a little different because – Mike Petten's in charge now, and despite what Andy Benoit, hater of number 88 on running backs, may tell you, he's not that similar to Dom Capers as far as philosophy and everything else. So throw that out the window. But Jair Alexander will probably be your starting slot. I won't be surprised if at some point this season your starting corners are Tremont and Josh Jackson on the outside with Jair Alexander in the slot, obviously. Kevin King could obviously make a push for that as well. And, you know, Devon House, I don't want him to be a starter. You know, I don't want to rely on him to be the number one corner, which I think the Packers did foolishly season. And I drank the Kool-Aid. I'll admit that. I thought that, you know, maybe they'd make him play a little bit better in Green Bay now that he was back to a scheme that he understood and all that other stuff. But it didn't happen for him. House was not very good. But if your number five corner is average, which I think House can be, just average, that's not a bad thing to have. You know, now you got a guy coming in with some experience. You're not putting in a random rookie to take the snaps that now Devon House would be getting. You know, you mentioned the fringe corners, Jason. I mean, Demetri Goodson played. I think we've talked about him a million times to say that he can't play cornerback in this league. He's just not good. Quentin Rollins obviously is playing safety. I am curious to see if that works out better for him. I honestly think he's going to make the team because of his positional versatility, but he hasn't played well when he's played cornerback. Lindsey Pipkins is a guy I like, I think, the most of those fringe corners, the Josh Hawkinses, the Lindsey Pipkins of the world, Donatello Brown, those guys. I think I like Pipkins the most, but I mean, none of them have really done anything to stand out. Josh Hawkins has made the team each of the last couple of years, and I think that's mostly a tool thing. He's got all the athletic ability in the world. He compares athletically similarly to Sam Shields, but, you know, he hasn't been the cover man that Sam Shields can be either. So that's – I think the secondary's in for at least at the cornerback group. They've done some promising things. Now, you mentioned the safeties. And that's where we'll go right now, because the game started. It was like the strangest, most exciting preseason game I can remember watching in quite some time, because the Packers get the pick six, then they force a three and out, and they go right down the field and score a touchdown, and then the Steelers score two touchdowns in what feels like 30 seconds, and it's 14-14 before the end of the first quarter. Now, the reason it was 14-14 before the end of the first quarter, obviously the safeties aren't the only ones that made bad plays on this series. But there's some issues in the back end. Kentrell Bryce has been poor, to say the very least, when he's been playing. He's been running with the starters, which we'll get to more on later because it goes into my most disappointing player for camp so far. Kentrell Bryce has been running with the starters, and he's leaving some to be desired. And ha-ha, Clinton Dix. I think all of us were kind of hoping that last year was an anomaly and he'll get back to himself. And he got beat for a touchdown by Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, albeit that's him being put in a position to fail, basically. But he missed a couple tackles himself. The safety group right now isn't very good. I think that that's a pretty fair assessment at this point. Clinton Dix is coming off a disappointing season. I think people think he's good. I think he's talented. He just hasn't shown it in a full year yet. Kentrell Bryce, I don't understand the fascination with him. Josh Jones was a second-round pick, and he's been rough, obviously. He's not getting run with the starters. And then you got guys like Quentin Rollins, Marwin Evans, Jermaine Whitehead. Just not a whole lot there, so to speak. Now, there are some free agent options. We've mentioned them. Eric Reed is one, obviously. I think we've talked about him before on this show. And George Iloka was just released today by the Cincinnati Bengals. I tend to believe that the Packers will not be looking at the safety market because had they wanted to, they would have by now. I think they like the guys they have for better or for worse. Now, that can change when Pettine's obviously going to start scheming some stuff up here in the next couple weeks. 3 weeks from today especially, so that might mask some of the issues that the safeties have. So we'll see how that goes. But, Jason, talk to me about the safeties. Can you make me feel better about them?
Well, I think I've already kind of alluded to the fact that I can't because I didn't like what I saw very much, but I'm willing to give it a chance and see how this team looks when they're dialing up everything that they're going to do in the regular season. So until they start looking bad week one and week two, and trust me, everyone's going to start freaking out and hitting the panic button if they're missing tackles and missing assignments and there's problems on the back end of the defense right away. Nobody's going to give these guys a pass. It's already being talked about, and it's one of the necessary evils of social media is we can all connect and enjoy being fans and connect with people from far away about the good things about the team, but we also hear a lot of negative too, and we have to deal with everybody freaking out before it's really necessary. As we all know, there's a subsection of Packers social media and Twitter and whatever medium you want to throw out there who will, if the second somebody is struggling, Aaron Rodgers throws an interception, it's time to trade him. And don't give them the extension, and they'll start breaking down how many millions of dollars per interception we're paying, the Packers are paying Aaron Rodgers and stuff like that. So it's the preseason. We still have another 2 weeks before we're playing live games, which, by the way, that's pretty freaking cool, 3 weeks. That's pretty freaking cool. We all have waited a very long time. It seems like every offseason just seems like it gets a month longer as I get older. I'm sure that's just a product of my aging. But the safety group, they don't have great depth. And I still think they're, like you said, getting out there and taking a look at a veteran that might be available. And there is one in particular who's available that for many reasons and for some reasons that I still don't understand is unemployed. There's options out there, and I think this team would be very wise to take a look at that. Everybody's been talking about Khalil Mack. We talked about it last week. That's still a thing. I have no idea if the Packers have even initiated conversations about that. But if you have a choice, it's a no-brainer. To bring a veteran safety in would take two clicks of a button and a couple dollars, you know, and I'm using that as a reference point. It's obviously more than that, but it would be that simple versus trying to do something with a Khalil Mack where it's going to take a huge overhaul and a lot of effort and a lot of moving of money and a lot of other things that would go into doing something like that. So I don't feel great about it, but I'm not panicking, I guess is the best way I can sum it up if I had to write a headline.
Fair enough. You know, I will wait. I tend to be a little more patient than most. Maybe that's to a fault, but I think, you know, I mentioned this on our last show, was that I think everyone has played Madden, and they just try to you know, make sure that everybody or that they're quote good at every position, and every position has depth, and every position is ready in case of injury. And it's just not that simple as bringing someone in. You know, for example, if somebody gets hurt in the middle of the season and you bring someone in, now they have to learn the playbook, learn the scheme, learn the players, learn the terminology, all that stuff. It's not as simple as plug and play. If it were, then I think all of us could be NFL general managers, but we're not. We're sitting here and we're drinking beer and we're watching football. That's what we do. So I will be a little more patient with the safeties, but I will say, yeah, I mean, I don't feel great about it. If you had to rank positional strength on this team, I think safety would come in near the bottom. You know, obviously we're not going to do that right this second, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to say safety's near the bottom of that list if we were to make one. So that'll be something to watch here in the next couple of weeks if they can figure something out at that position. Maybe when the lights come on, Clinton Dix and Kentrell Bryce or Josh Jones or whoever it is that they decide to play there become players. Or maybe they add somebody. I don't know. We'll see, because I know if there's anything I think that we've learned in recent time since Brian Gutekunst has become the general manager, basically, is that if there is a way to improve the team, he'll at least have the conversation. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to sign everybody, but I won't be surprised if the Packers sign a couple guys after roster cuts at the end of the season. I think that may happen specifically at safety and at the edge rushing position, which brings us to, Jason, we're halfway through camp now, halfway through the preseason at least. There's two preseason games left. The Packers might play their guys on Friday against the Raiders. I'm not sure, because Rodgers talked about how he won, how he thought it was important to play in front of the home crowd and all that stuff, which you mentioned earlier, and I thought that was cool. He hasn't played a home game since last September before the other night, so getting him out there to play was nice to see. Get him in front of the home fans, let him cheer him on a little bit. That was nice. So we'll see if they play their guys on Friday against Oakland. I would tend to lean towards I don't think they're going to, but, I mean, I don't know. McCarthy has typically used that game as a dress rehearsal. And last year, that dress rehearsal for Aaron Rodgers meant, I believe, he played two possessions. So that may mean he plays two possessions. This time, it may mean he plays none. I don't know. So, Camp Jason, who has been your most encouraging player that you've seen on offense and defense? And then we'll go to disappointing after that. But let's start with happy news. Who's been the most encouraging player you've seen on offense and then on defense?
The good news is it's hard to come up with one because there have been so many standouts so far. And you also have to kind of put a frame of reference behind it as well. I mean, you could easily say Aaron Rodgers because he's back and from the collarbone and he looks good and we can be confident that he's going to be 12 out there. You could say Devontae Adams because Adams has only gotten better and is juking cornerbacks out of their shoes, both Packers cornerbacks in practice and opponents cornerbacks in preseason games. You could say Jake Kumerow, and I know some of our listeners and fans out there are just reveling in the fact that I'm speaking his name finally, because he keeps showing up and doing great things, and he's making the receivers position, you know, a tough battle and a tough conversation to have for the GM and the head coach when they have to make final cutdowns. Jimmy Graham, great chemistry with Aaron Rodgers. He's a great addition to the offense. Mercedes Lewis is blocking guys and trucking them all over the place. The offensive line, you know. But, you know, I'm gonna just kind of, for the sake of just throwing everybody off, maybe it's Brian Bulaga. Because without him, the right side of the offensive line is a huge question mark. And he might get out there and struggle, and he could re-injure himself, and there's a lot of things that could happen. But as far as I know and as far as we've been told, he's got a chance to play week one and be the starter out there. And I think we can all agree that if he is healthy and effective, Brian Bulaga is a much better option than any of the other options that the Packers have at tackle right now. That includes Jason Spriggs, Kyle Murphy, Byron Bell, all of which have struggled at times during this preseason. So I think it's Brian Bulaga because he shores up such a huge need. If you want this offense to churn and go, starts up front. The line's got to give Rodgers time to throw, and he's got to give the backs running lanes. And if Rodgers is going to get on the move, he's got to have confidence rolling either to the right or to the left that he's covered and that his guys are going to keep these big defenders off of him. So I'll go with that on offense. I'll go with Bulaga. And then on defense, I guess for me on defense, kind of a toss-up, and I'm excited because it's young guys, Montrevious Adams, Josh Jackson, and Oren Burks in their own way. I mean, Oren Burks, I love his spirit, and I love his speed. I'm so encouraged by him. If I had to give it to one guy, I'd probably go with Burks because we lost Jake Ryan, and everybody starts freaking out, like I mentioned, what fans do and how they react when Ryan went down because we're used to him being back there. We didn't know what we had in Burks. You want that veteran presence. You want that familiarity. We've seen enough from Burks over the last couple of weeks that he's probably going to make some mistakes when he gets out there. He's a rookie, still learning, but he's going to be a good thing for this defense just because of the way he plays and what he offers when he's suited up and when he's in uniform. So I'll go with Burks on defense. I'll go with Brian Bulaga on offense as mine, and I'm going to bank on that we're not repeating each other.
No, the Bulaga one is interesting because, yeah, the guy came back from a torn ACL in like 9 months. Impressive in and of itself. The Packers starting five offensive line, when they're healthy, I think is very good. You know, David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga are two of the finest tackles at their position. Lane Taylor has acquitted himself very well at the left guard position since they surprisingly cut Josh Sitton that 1 year. And Justin McCray, before the injury, was playing well, and Corey Lindsley. So we got some steady group on the interior there as well. The two tackles, I imagine, will be playing well. David Bakhtiari might be the best left tackle in all of football. So the offensive line, that's an interesting answer. Offensively, the most encouraging player for me, Jake Kumerow obviously has played very well. I think that he's made me at least look like an idiot from the standpoint of I said I don't think he makes the team, and now I'm changing my opinion. I think that he probably will, assuming the shoulder injury he's got is not too serious and he can get back out there. Packers have an open practice tomorrow, so we'll know more tomorrow afternoon as far as what they're doing. So, but my answer is actually Equanimeous St. Brown. I know the box score hasn't shown a whole lot, but his route running is very good now. I think that it's possible he makes a contribution as a big slot receiver right now. Actually, of the three rookies, Jamon Moore, St. Brown, and Valdez-Scantling, I actually think that – I know Scantling has had the most productive game, but I think that the one most likely to contribute from what it looks like right now this season is St. Brown. He's so smooth in and out of his breaks. I had him rated very highly as a receiver. I really liked his talent. I think it's very possible he becomes – a very good player for this team, and possibly this season. I'm not saying he's going to catch like 80 passes or anything stupid like that, but a role player that can step in, yeah, I think St. Brown can do that. He's been encouraging for me. On defense, Josh Jackson, I've talked about him a lot. I guess it's not overly encouraging because I already thought that was possible. I thought it was very possible that he would be a very good player for the Packers, even this season. Like I said, I would have drafted him if Brian Gutekunst had brought his pick to the podium and had Commissioner Goodell announce Josh Jackson as the 14th overall pick, I wouldn't have batted an eyelash. It would have been just fine. I actually would have been thrilled. I was even more thrilled that they got him in the second round at 45th overall. I think it's insane that he went that deep. It's been crazy how good he's been early on. Probably the most, but not to me. But encouraging-wise, yeah, I almost have to go there because the cornerback situation has been so poor each of the last 2 years is that maybe that position is solved for the long term. If Kevin King, Jaire Alexander, and Josh Jackson all pan out, the Packers have a very good cornerback situation for the next 4 or 5 years, and maybe longer if they decide to keep all three of those guys. My alternate answer is Reggie Gilbert. He should have been on the 53-man roster after last preseason. He was not for reasons I'm still not entirely sure of. Mike McCarthy has talked about that since then. They're not really sure either what happened. But he's the third best edge rusher on this team. So I'm not sure how good of a thing that is. I mean, Gilbert obviously has some talent. And he has some ability, but you know, obviously he was undrafted and he went that way for a reason. The hope is that the Packers pass rush will be good enough, because I still remain concerned about their edge position, but Gilbert's been good. I can't complain there. Disappointment. Obviously training camp brings that about with everybody. The most disappointing player that I've seen halfway through camp on offense is kind of twofold, one of which is health-related, one of which is production-related. Aaron Jones is on this list because I think he's the most talented running back on the roster. It's been disappointing that he's been hurt and unable to play, especially considering that he's not going to play football for the first 2 weeks of the season because of a suspension of last year. That's been disappointing because I think he's falling behind the likes of Jamal Williams and Ty Montgomery. Now, not that those guys are bad players. I think that obviously Jamal Williams and Ty Montgomery have some very good niche roles on this. Aaron Jones is the best running back on this team. I think he's the best runner. I think he's the most explosive. I think all those things. And he hasn't been able to play. He'll make the team, obviously. The old adage of can't make the club in the tub doesn't really work for him because he's going to make the team anyways. But he might lose some quality reps to guys down the stretch that go to guys that I just don't think are as talented as him, and that's disappointing. The other guy is Jamon Moore. Everything looks great until the ball comes near his hands. And when the ball comes near his hands, it hits them and then falls to the turf. And it's been that way almost exclusively. He has yet to catch a pass in the preseason, to my knowledge. I know he caught one the other night that was nullified by a penalty. I do not believe he caught one in the first game against the Titans. He's had a couple big drops. And you can tell it's in his head. There was one training camp practice I was able to attend. It was last Sunday. So after the Titans game, and the receivers came down by where Frankie and I were sitting, and they were throwing passes down, and everything with Jamon Moore, it just looked like he was fighting the football instead of just naturally receiving it, naturally catching it. And that's disappointing because he was a fourth-round pick. I mean, the Packers clearly thought enough of the depth of this receiving class to wait on a guy like Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. They did not sign any veterans. They have not signed any veterans, and they better not freaking sign Dez Bryant. Let me get that mix in there right now. Because of these kinds of guys, they think they can produce early. And it looks like right now that Moore is just in a struggle. We'll see if that changes here, but right now I think he's the leader in the clubhouse for a disappointing player on the offense. Defense for me, it's Josh Jones, because I thought this guy was a breakout waiting to happen. I think he's way more talented than Kentrell Bryce, and I thought that the Petton scheme was going to use him very well, be able to find a spot for him easily, and clearly it hasn't. I'm trusting the coaches here and that they believe they're putting the best guys on the field. Josh Jones has not been the best player, and that's disappointing because this is a guy who you're hoping – he was a second-round pick. He's a top 60 pick. I mean, you're hoping that that's a guy who can be a very big contributor to your defense. I've seen the talent on full display. I've mentioned it several times, that Bengals game last season, week three, where the Packers came back and won in overtime. Josh Jones was the best player on the field for either side that day, and it just hasn't translated. There's something wrong. He's playing with, you know, the backups in the third and the fourth quarter of preseason games, and that's not the kind of route you're hoping he takes. You were hoping he took the route of ascending into maybe not a star, but a very useful player on the defense. I think there's no question about this. Jason, disappointing guys on offense and defense.
Well, I guess I'll stick with my theme and just say that because we don't have great depth on the offensive line, I'm disappointed in Jason Spriggs for not being what he should be for somebody who was drafted as high as he is, although obviously that falls on the Packers scouting department and Ted Thompson for having the belief in him that he could be that depth. I just don't want to see them get stuck and be in a bad position to where they've got all these great weapons and this great system in place on offense and defense, but the offensive line can't hold up their end of the bargain, so the offense has changed, and Aaron Rodgers is having to do things that he doesn't necessarily want to or need to do, and they can't run what they want to run because of it. So I'll go with the backup offensive linemen, although – maybe like a Dylan Day and some of those guys can step up and solidify that and shore that up. I would probably go with that. If I had to pick a skill player, it's Jamon Moore. Jamon Moore just needs to, you know, no pun intended, show more. He needs to catch a few balls, get some separation, and earn himself more playing time. Mike McCarthy talks all the time about how players earn their time. He needs to earn more of it then by making some plays and warrant being on the field more. And so hopefully that'll happen this week, and he can be a contributor and a part of the offense, because he's got a lot to offer if he's playing at full potential. And then on the defensive side, right now, I got to go with HaHa Clinton Dix from what we've seen so far. He just needs to, you know, he's a great locker room guy. Okay, great. He's a veteran. He's a good locker room guy. His teammates respect him. Awesome. But he's paid to make plays. He's paid to do things on the field. You know, prove that last year was a down year. Step up. You made the Pro Bowl in 2016. That was just two seasons ago. Step up and be what you're supposed to be, which is fully bloomed, blossomed, flourishing at this point in his career. If you want to make the comparison, even though they're not the same safety and they're not the same player, but at this point in his career, Nick Collins was Nick Collins. So HaHa Clinton Dix needs to be whatever his ceiling is. And if he reached it and he's only declining, that's a huge problem, because the Packers are going to have a big need at safety coming into next year when they have other things they probably could address, potentially the pass rush. If Clay Matthews is on his way out, if Nick Perry's sliding or on his way down, if we don't have Khalil Mack, which we probably won't. So those are my two go-tos. But I have hope that they can both be solidified and they can both be okay. I'm not panicking in any area of this team, but that offensive line up front could potentially become a huge issue if one of those guys gets hurt. And the reality is that one of them is probably going to miss a game or two. It just happens every year. And you don't want the guys on the back end of your defense giving up a huge play, and that could manifest itself at the worst possible time, aka the playoffs, when you did such an amazing job all season, and even if they win 13 or 14 games, but they're heading home early because of a mishap that they had when we could have all seen it coming in the preseason, and we knew that Clinton Dix was struggling. They didn't address it or do anything. I don't want that to be the reason we're talking about an early exit from the playoffs, you know, when the season is over.
Yeah, that'll be something to watch, too. Let's talk about the backup offensive line for a second, because, Jason, I think that everybody all around is, like, up in arms about the fact that the Packers don't have any backup offensive linemen. And, well, let me start by first of all saying that's not true. Personally, I think on the right side of the offensive line, Kyle Murphy can be passable as a right tackle. I think he'd be a good right guard. Lucas Patrick can play center or guard, and I think he can be a really good guard. Adam Pankey has been good on both sides of the line on the interior. I think the biggest issue the Packers have is they don't have a backup left tackle. But then I say that, and I look around the league, and does anybody have a backup left tackle? I mean, line play in the NFL is just poor, because offensive linemen in college are not very well developed to pass protect for longer than a second and a half, because every ball is out of the quarterback's hand in 2 seconds. It's all quick game. It's all slants. It's all stuff like that. The running game is all zone blocking and gimmicky kind of stuff, but the quarterback run game as well. So I know that obviously everybody wants, like I said, it's the Madden GM mentality of David Bakhtiari is my starter. And if he gets hurt, then, well, Jason Peters is my backup. Now, that'd be great, but it's just not feasible. Backup offensive linemen in the NFL really suck. That's just kind of the nature that we're at. And that's especially true at the tackle position. The Packers are lucky to have two good starting tackles. Some teams don't even have that. So they're lucky as of right now to at least have that. Jason, I mean, are you up in arms over this, or do you just kind of – it kind of is what it is. You know, I've always said that there's that old saying from Tom Moore, the former Colts offensive coordinator, and they asked why Jim Sorgi, the backup quarterback behind Peyton Manning, never got more reps. And he turned to him and basically said, if 18 goes down, we are effed, and we don't practice effed. That's why, you know, I'm a believer that – your backup quarterback position, it'd be nice to get average play out of that. Obviously, you know, Nick Foles was a backup quarterback and won the Super Bowl last year. I think that's an anomaly. Because I think more often than not, the backup quarterback probably sucks too, more often than not. But if your left tackle's hurt, I think with any team that's going to be the case. It's not unique to the Packers, but the backup left tackle is just not going to be very good. That's just how I feel. Jason, what's your thoughts on this theory of mine?
Agreed. I agree with it. And I know that the, you know, like I said, the depth on the right side can come along. Here's the deal. If you have a backup left tackle that could be starting, then you would be foolish not to trade that tackle for some serious value, because there's 31 other teams in the league who would probably value your backup slash starter left tackle who's not playing. So you should never have a backup left tackle, because you should be getting some value for that. I mean, there's some teams that will give up a first-round pick for that. So that's the one area where I say you can't have two starters. I mean, I'm not going to be as foolish to say, well, it's the same thing as if you have two starting quarterbacks, you have none. That's different. Quarterback position is completely different. You're not going to have that. And the reality is, when your starters go down, like you said, there's a drop-off. There's a reason why guys are starters and other guys are not. So this roster is not bulletproof. It's not going to be bulletproof. There's going to be some areas that are weaker than others. What frustrates me over the past couple seasons is that the Packers have been put in position, some by their own doing, some by just bad luck and injury, of having to rely on areas where they're weak and they don't have the resources to overcome it. And then as a result, they're losing games. They don't have the seed that they want, the higher seed that they want. They're playing playoff games on the road, you name it. So you can't build the perfect roster, but I will say this, and Jacob, I'll ask you for your quick opinion on this before we go to our next topic. She talked about Brian Gutekunst and the new regime. I already trust them a lot with what I've seen them do with this roster. That doesn't mean that something's not going to fall apart, that they're not going to miss on a guy, that Jamon Moore, for example, maybe he never turns into anything. Equanimeous St. Brown doesn't blossom, and he was a camp darling, and he never got good and got into games. You know, whatever. Insert position group. The offensive line's an unmitigated disaster because both guards went down or they lost Bulaga for the season again. That stuff can happen, but I have a lot of faith and a lot of trust in this front office, that they've made good decisions and that they can continue to do so if the Packers get into a pinch. What's your thoughts? What is your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they mentioned last year it was, I mean, consider the source here, but, you know, the Packers signed a couple of free agents last year. They signed Martellus Bennett. They signed, oh, my God, I just mentioned his name on the show. I promised I'd never do that again. I apologize. They signed the first tight end. And
bye.
Then they signed, they signed Lance Kendricks after they signed the other guy, and then they signed Ahmad Brooks later in the free agent process. And somebody goes, man, Ted's like really stepping out of his shell. And it was JerMichael Finley who says, Ted, he's listening to those other guys below him. Well, one of those guys below him was Brian Gutekunst. I think that he's shown a willingness to participate in free agency. I mean, we mentioned that the Packers signed Jimmy Graham. And in that process of signing Jimmy Graham, they were also a finalist for Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson has admitted he was choosing between the Packers and the Bears. Now, whether or not the Packers would have signed Robinson and Graham, we'll never know. But they were in the conversation for those people. They were in the conversation for Sammy Watkins. They signed Muhammad Wilkerson. They were in the conversation for the cornerbacks. He signed Tremont Williams. He re-signed Devon House, which I'll admit I wasn't happy at the time, but right now it looks okay. He added some more young talent to the cornerback room, and it's not he hasn't ever just sat complacent, I don't think. Now, that doesn't mean he mentioned it in his opening press conference. That doesn't mean we're going to sign everybody. That doesn't mean we're going to get everybody that we go after. But they're in the conversation of conversations they were not in before. I think that it's been made very clear that they haven't been in those conversations before, and now they are. Guys like Jimmy Graham, Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins. Now, did they sign all three of those guys? No. Obviously, they didn't. They traded for DeShone Kizer, opinion on, but it's another move that I don't think is made if Ted Thompson is at the helm. And that's nothing against what Ted did. Ted had his way. Ted's a Packers Hall of Famer. He won the fourth Super Bowl title. He'll be in the Packers Hall of Fame one day. He just had his way of doing things. Gutekunst does things a little differently. That's why I think that you can at least feel confident in that at the end of this spot that they're in right now, training camp, if they feel that they're deficient in an area, they'll at least be trying to address it. Now, does that mean that they will and they'll go out and get an impact player? Maybe. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But I do trust the front office to at least be active in trying to address the issue. To go further on that, the backup offensive lineman issue, for example, it's not something they haven't tried to address. It just hasn't. I mean, sometimes you try to address things and they just don't work out. Jason Spriggs was a guy they traded up for. They were clearly very high on him. He has not translated to the NFL. He didn't play well at the tackle positions. He got hurt last year, obviously. But their plan was for him to be the swing tackle because we all remember in 2015, the Packers had both tackles get hurt. Bulaga and Bakhtiari were both missing time. And Don Barclay was playing left tackle and Josh Walker was playing right tackle and they moved all kinds of combinations. And it was just terrible. No offense to those guys, but Donnie Barclay, as Mike McCarthy likes to call him, should never be a left tackle. Josh Walker should never play tackle. He should have been a guard. Eventually, it got so desperate. I think everybody forgets J.C. Tretter played left tackle in a playoff game because Bakhtiari was still nursing an ankle injury. Eventually, returned the following week, but J.C. Tretter was the left tackle. That wasn't a team that had a whole lot of offensive line depth. To finish my point here, you know, Jason, you mentioned, you know, you want to be good at every position. You hope that you're set at every position with depth and everything like that. And a roster is not perfect. The New England Patriots are not a perfect roster, and they're like the gold standard. The Philadelphia Eagles were not a perfect roster last year, and they won the frickin' Super Bowl. The 2010 Packers were not a perfect roster. They had Frank Zombo and Eric Walden playing across from Clay Matthews in that defense. They won the Super Bowl. They weren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. Every team's going to have holes. It's just a matter of how much can you mask those holes or how much can you overcome those holes by getting passable play from guys like Frank Zombo. Hell, the Packers cornerback situation that year, I think a lot of us remember Sam Shields really fondly and deservedly so. That dude was an unknown. They threw him out there because he could run as fast as DeSean Jackson in week one. That's why he started that week. It wasn't like they knew that this dude was just going to be a stud. By the end of the year, yeah, he was. They cut Al Harris because Sam Shields emerged. But it wasn't like that was a given by at the beginning of the season. I think it's ridiculous to think that any team could be. Jason, any more quick thoughts on what I just said before we move on?
Man, that was a lot. No, not really. I think it just illustrates that you've got to have patience and you've got to trust the experts in the room and those that know better and just humble yourself and realize that maybe you don't. That's probably maybe the biggest takeaway from all of that.
Well, I mean, there's a lot there, obviously. I think that we've talked about it, you know, before, and I think we can move on now. So the Packers play the Raiders on Friday night. There will be the return of not the return because it's not at Lambeau, but they'll be facing off against Jordy Nelson. I'm pretty sure you guys have heard of him by this point. Playing in Oakland against John Gruden and Derek Carr and not Khalil Mack, and we'll talk about that before we finish off here as well. But the Raiders will play. It's typically the dress rehearsal game. Jason, let's start very simple. I mean, I guess we'll know more tomorrow during practice, but do you expect the Packers starters, guys like Rodgers, Bakhtiari, Devontae, those guys to play Friday night?
No. I know Brian Gutekunst is listening to this show, so you will not dress your starters. They will all be coaching from the sideline, and you are going to start evaluating your younger players. There's no better way to do that than in a live game setting and on the road. You want to get introduced to the NFL? It's a preseason game, but just going on a road trip and going through that and then preparing and having to play in a game, that'll teach you pretty quickly what spending 8 weeks on the road this coming season is going to be like. Now, these guys traveled in college. a lot of them, and I get that. It's not new to them, but give them as much experience and glimpse into what life as an NFL player is going to be. And, you know, the Raiders are going to be pretty decent this year. If they're going to play their starters, especially if they're going to play their starters, then why wouldn't you put your young guys out there? It's a game you don't have to win. Why put guys at risk that don't need to be put at risk when they're traveling? You know, I don't know how much that increases or decreases the risk of injury, but we saw everything we need to see last week. I think that the veterans don't need to prove anything anymore. I think it's about being healthy, going in with all your guys. You got guys that are dinged up, nicked up. Give them time to heal. Let's start out the season fast, because the Packers really do – they need to get out to a fast start this season. They do every year, but really this season they do, because they've got a tough stretch in their schedule, middle to end of the season. And every little bit of momentum they can get built up, and every edge that they can get in the standings heading into that is going to be big. And health is obviously a big part of that equation. So be smart, Packers. Do the right thing.
Yeah, I agree. I don't need to see Aaron Rodgers or Devontae Adams or anybody like that. I think we can put them in bubble wrap and let's go play the Bears on September the 9th. So since we're not expecting to see them, I imagine we'll see Jordy Nelson. I imagine we'll see the Raiders starters. But again, I mean, I don't know. It's not like I'm keeping tabs on John Gruden's Oakland Raiders other than one big reason, and we'll get to that here in a little bit, as I keep saying we will. With that in mind, Jason, since you don't think and you don't wish to see the starters, is there anything in particular you're looking for in this third exhibition game? Because obviously, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to make the team. Newsflash, guys. Jimmy Graham is going to make the team. Big surprise there. Is there anybody that you're looking for to really put like a final stamp? Because this is really one of the last big chances that they have. The fourth preseason game, for starters, are some of the worst games that you'll ever watch, because it's just a lot of guys trying to get out of there. The coaches are trying to get out of there and trying to get out healthy. So is there anything you're watching in particular on Friday night that is a big deal for this roster?
Any of the guys that haven't played much so far, or guys that need to improve? If Oakland runs their starting offense out there, for example, I want to see Jair Alexander covering ones. I want to see Josh Jackson covering ones. I want to see Jamon Moore up against starting corners and defense. I want to see how he navigates through that offensive line. Step up, give me some hope. Show me something, Kyle Murphy. Show me something, Jason Spriggs. Show me something that we've got more to feel okay about. I don't say great because it's not great, but okay about with the offensive line. So answer the questions. That's always the biggest thing with preseason. Because like you said, the fourth preseason game, this is really the last chance to evaluate players and really give a crap about what's on the field. That fourth week, that fourth preseason game, that's basically what the most teams use to round out the last 10 spots on the roster. And those guys are, you know, seven of those guys are inactive on game day, and they're going to be inactive most weeks this season. So I could care less about next week's game. This week's game is the one that it's going to be our last chance to take a look at it and hopefully really get confident with what we see from these players. The next opportunity that we'll get is going to be week one against the Bears when the regular season opens. So answer the questions, that especially those that where there's some concern or some doubt as to whether or not a position group is solidified and how ready the rookies are.
Yeah, for me, I mean, obviously Jair Alexander, I want to see Kevin King play. I'm hoping he's healthy enough to go, because again, you know, I mentioned this is a really talented secondary, and Kevin King may be the most talented of those three. It's at least possible. But he hasn't been able to go yet in the exhibition season because of his shoulder. And when he's come back, he's dropped out. So the hope is that he's healthy and ready, but I'd like to see him play some games. He is from the West Coast, so he would like to play in that game as well, I'm sure. But the other thing, I'm looking at the backup quarterback spot. I've mentioned DeShone Kizer's the guy, I think. I think he should be the backup quarterback. I think he's more talented. That's with all due respect to Brett Hundley. I think there's been some improvement in his game since he has gone through the offseason program and all that sort of stuff. I just think that I've said this all offseason that I don't I don't believe that the backup quarterback, quote, competition is really a competition. They didn't trade Demaryius Randall for somebody to be their third-string quarterback. So that's what I believe. I'll believe that until I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, feel free to make fun of me. But Kizer is more talented than Brett Hundley. He certainly has some flaws. But you saw, like, the throw to Jake Kumerow. Everybody was obviously going Kumerow scoring a touchdown, but that was a dart by DeShone Kizer as well. And I think they're going to get some joy to the rest. That's especially true if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play. So if Rodgers doesn't play, it's really up to Hundley and Kizer to see who the backup quarterback is going to be. I think it's Kizer, but, you know, he's got to put together another good performance. So that's what I'm looking for. Finally, Jason, we talked about it last week. Khalil Mack remains in limbo. He will not report to Raiders camp. He has missed both exhibition games. It looks as if, at least as of right now, he's going to miss this one. We mentioned the odds books last week that the Packers were favored over the Raiders. That remains true. The two favorites to have Khalil Mack by October are the Packers and the Bears, which is ironic for a lot of reasons. After that, Jason, there was another thing that came out that said the odds were minus 500 that Khalil Mack will be moved before the season is over, moved, traded. That means that is favored now. And before you guys, again, I mentioned this last week, before you roll your eyes at me, LeBron James, the betting favorite, was Los Angeles. Oklahoma City's betting favorite, the betting favorite for Kevin Durant was Golden State. That's where he's at. The betting favorite to trade for Kawhi Leonard was the Toronto Raptors. It's not, as I mentioned, some unsubstantiated crap. That doesn't necessarily mean a trade is imminent either, but I wanted to give you a chance again, Jason, to just let you know that the odds apparently are in favor of him being moved. You are Brian Gutekunst. What are you doing?
Jacob, I lost the, for once, it's not a mute button issue. I apologize. I lost the audio for some reason, and I think to pull the curtain back a little bit here, our online studio, I actually dial in via a different avenue than you do. So I don't know why that happens, but we almost made it through an entire show without a technical glitch, but I apologize. Can you repeat the question?
I said the odds are in favor of Khalil Mack being traded. The Packers are the favorite according to the odds sharks that we talked about last week. So you are Brian Gutekunst right now. What are you doing?
Got it. Okay. So last week I was hot and heavy on getting Mack, and you give up what you got to give up if you have a chance to get a transcendent player, and you do what you got to do. A week has passed, and as always happens, we kind of step back, cool off, prevail, you know, cooler heads prevail. And now, you know, the whole idea that Reggie Gilbert by himself is enough that the Packers don't want to make this move and don't want to do this deal is ridiculous. Reggie Gilbert is not Khalil Mack. He might be putting up numbers like Khalil Mack in the preseason, but it's the preseason. So we got to temper our expectations there and our hopes. I'm waiting. I'm waiting because Adam Schefter tweeted out and reported that it doesn't sound like Mack and the Raiders are getting any closer to discussing or getting a deal done. And I'll tell you why. It's two words, John and Gruden. This is what you get when you bring a John Gruden into town. He runs his team, his very own way. He's got his own style. It hasn't changed in the 30, 40 plus years he's been in coaching football. And he's holding his ground, and Khalil Mack is saying, listen, I'm not going to let some fine and some, you know, paycheck docking stop me from making a statement. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not singing a different tune by Tuesday afternoon, for example, of this week. And all of a sudden, Khalil Mack is tired of losing money day by day, and he's signed a deal, and he's back in Oakland. That's what I think is going to happen. You got to wait until the Raiders get a little bit more desperate and realize that Khalil Mack is not playing around, and he's not coming back, and hopefully the Packers don't have to give up two first-round picks, because I think that's a lot of capital to give up, especially when you think about some of those needs I talked about earlier that they might need to address next year. Pass rush, safety could potentially be two of those need areas. And then obviously parlaying it way down the road, hopefully several years, but they're eventually going to need a quarterback. And if you want a good quarterback, you've got to have draft capital to move up and get one. because hopefully your team isn't so bad that you're picking first anyway. So that's what I say. I don't think we're in that sweet spot yet where it makes a lot of sense and the value is there. I mean, you're not going to get a ton of value when you're talking about a player like Mac, but I just don't think that the Packers are in a position of deep need right now, and they have a history of sticking with their guys and liking their players. Nick Perry just came off the physically unable to perform list, so they've got some reasons to kind of wait and see what happens and what they have before they make a move. I'll tell you what, it's not like someone else is going to swoop in and make this move. They might. Another team might swoop in and make it, but for once in our lifetime, the Packers actually are the favorites to actually make a huge splash move, because for once in our lifetimes, they have the capital and they have the resources to do it. So I still think he's got to wait it out a little bit, though, and try to maximize what you'd be getting for what they'd have to spend.
Well, I got to say this. That's not the answer I expected. You never cease to amaze me, Mr. Perrone. So thank you for that. If I am Brian Gutekunst, I'm not on the phone with this podcast right now because I'm blowing up Reggie McKenzie. I've mentioned it before. I've said it on Twitter several times since the last show we had. You know, Packers fans, when we got to the end of last season planning, not all of us, but the general consensus is the Packers have Aaron Rodgers and not a lot of transcendent type players. And now that they have a chance to get one, everybody's worried about a backup left guard or a marginal, maybe above average strong safety. I mean, listen, Ron Wolf put it this way. There are four of the most important positions. There's passer, pass protector, pass defender, and pass rusher. And the Packers would have a chance in this case to have the best quarterback in the history of the NFL. That's Aaron Rodgers. Okay, that guy would be on their side. If they get Khalil Mack, that might be arguably the best edge rusher in the NFL. Hughes and Nick Perry and Reggie Gilbert, better players. Instead of a rolled ankle, let's just say the Packers get Khalil Mack and Nick Perry rolls his ankle tomorrow, breaks his hand. Good example because that's happened often. He breaks his hand tomorrow, then the starter on the other side of the edge is Clay Matthews instead of Reggie Gilbert, who then his backup is Kyler Fackrell or Vince Beagle or whoever. Instead of that, you have a chance to not only add a transcendent player, but build depth at one of the most important positions in the NFL. I'm all in. Obviously, I can't promise this trade will happen. I don't think anybody can. I don't even know if Khalil Mack's available. But if he is, the Packers should 100% be all in on this. Now, I'm not saying to give up your next six first-round picks or give up an entire draft the way Mike Ditka did once for Ricky Williams. But if the Raiders insist on both of those first-round picks, give them up, sign the extension. I don't give a damn. He's one of the best players in football. I think it's that simple. Once the regular season starts, I promise you guys we'll stop talking about this. But, you know, stuff keeps breaking. And, you know, we've mentioned the Packers have a very good chance to acquire this guy. And I think they should. That's my opinion. So with that in mind, that will end today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. It is at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. And you can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. I want to thank our sponsor, Ticket King. Guys, I just bought my tickets to the 49ers game. I will be picking them up from Ticket King the day of the game. Come in, say hello. Let's go cheer on the Packers and beat up on the 49ers that night. Get them for anything. I want to thank those guys. It's right down the street from the stadium. Oh, all kinds of stuff on that. I'm out of breath. I apologize. Thank the show. Also want to thank Andy Herman for running a Pack-A-Day. It's called the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It's a large group of Packers fans, Packers bloggers, Packers, all kinds of stuff. And some of the guys I don't even think are associated with the Packers, so that makes it kind of cool. It gives you a different perspective. I've listened every single day. I am recording with Nick Schmitz tomorrow night. We will air on Wednesday morning. That will be our episode. We've done a couple. It's been very fun. Be sure to follow that. It's at PackADay. Very easy to find. It's on iTunes. It's on all kinds of different podcast-related apps. check them out, give us a rating, let us know how we're doing. I've had a couple of you followers that have come since I've said to follow me and say hello. So thank you for that. Hello back. It's been nice interacting with you guys the last couple of weeks. Next week, we will be talking about the third preseason game where the Packers take on the Raiders in Oakland on Friday night. The game starts at 9:30 Central Time. And then on September 3rd, I will turn 27 years old. It is my birthday. But that is not the big deal. The big deal that day is Jason and I will be doing our season preview show. We do it every year. We pick all 16 games. We pick the NFL MVP. We pick the Super Bowl winner. It's an hour and a half dripping in Packers goodness. Hopefully my voice is not shot. I will be in Madison to see Metallica the night before. So I promise I will try and preserve my voice. But if any of you have ever been to a Metallica concert, you know how hard that may be. So, Jason, remember, September 3rd, I know you won't forget, we will be picking every game during the season, postseason, Super Bowl winner. We will let you know if the Packers indeed are going to take home the Vince Lombardi trophy this year. Thank you guys for listening in. Jason, anything real quick before we sign off?
Go, Pack, go.
Go, Pack, go. That's right. Thank you guys for listening in. See you next week.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.